Okay, so just so everybody knows, this meeting will be recorded. And I believe it is now 1:31, so we'll call this meeting to order. We'll start out with a round of introductions, and I will just call out your name as I see you on my screen. Virginia, why don't you go ahead?
If I can unmute myself.
I can hear you.
Oh, you can?
Yep.
Okay. I'm in two places because my computer audio is so bad. I also logged in on my phone to the audio. The implementation work group, we did meet last week.
Oh,
and,
sorry, Virginia. We were just doing introductions really quick.
Oh, sorry. I'm Virginia De Lima. I'm on the Water Planning Council Advisory Group representing science and other things.
I realized I forgot to introduce myself, Lisa Charmett. I am the co-chair representing the Fisheries Advisory Council. I'm also the executive director of Rivers Alliance. Karen, go ahead.
Karen Bernasco, Save the Sound, and I represent Watershed Lands.
Josh?
Josh Kansler, Southeastern Connecticut Water Authority, other co-chair.
Iris?
Iris Kaminsky, New Haven Environmental Advisory Council, and I'm also serving here on the drought subcommittee.
Brett?
Corinne Fitting, Department of Energy and Environmental Protection.
The other Fred. Okay.
Hi, Corinne. We'll call you Fred from now on. Hi, I'm Fred Conley. On behalf of the energy industry.
Judy?
Sorry. Judy Allen, I'm a member of the former Save Our Water Connecticut and an interested consumer about water.
Allie? Hibbert?
Allie Hibbert, Department of Energy and Environmental Protection.
Jeff?
Hi, good afternoon. Jeff Pugliese, Middlesex County Chamber of Commerce, here representing the business community. Thank you.
John Hudak?
John Hudak, Regional Water Authority, representing regional water companies.
Jonathan Avery?
From Hazardville and Jewett City Water Company, representing small to mid-sized privately owned companies.
Sean Hayden?
My name is Sean Hayden, and I'm the executive director of the Lake Warmock Task Force.
Marianne?
Marianne Dickinson with the Alliance for Water Efficiency. We're headquartered in Chicago, but we do work all over the country.
Carol?
Carol Haskins, Pontotoc River Watershed Coalition, representing water resources.
Leanne?
Sorry, I had to unmute. Dan Lawrence, Taquarian Water, representing large private water companies.
Aaron?
Aaron Budras, Nugatuck Valley Council of Governments, representing COGS.
Bruce?
Bruce Swickson of OPM and staff to this group.
Allie Aya?
Hi, I'm Allie Aya. I'm with Pura. I'm replacing Gail, who is happily retired now. I was with Commissioner Bukowski.
Tom?
Tom Tyler with the Metropolitan District. I'm the wastewater representative.
Sarah?
Sarah Ridyard with Connecticut Water.
Brenda?
Brenda Watson here, Operation Fuel, representing ratepayers, consumers.
Great. Thank you very much. And I appreciate you guys going through the introductions. You know, we do all know each other most of the time, but if someone just happens to watch the recordings to see what we're all about, it's good to know for folks who might be just tuning in to take a look or to know who we all are. So has everybody had a chance to look at the minutes from February 16th? Are there any edits, comments? If not, I'll hear a motion to approve it.
So moved, Karen.
Second.
Okay, Karen made the motion. seconded by John Hudak. Is there any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
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 Are there any opposed? Are there any abstentions?
Yes, this is John Avery. I was not present last.
And this is Brenda. I'll also abstain.
Okay, we have abstentions from Jonathan Avery and Brenda Watson. Anyone else? All right. We will move on to Water Planning Council updates. I see that Martha Smith and Margaret Miner, both of Rivers Alliance, have joined us as well. So welcome, guys. So Water Planning Council updates. Now, Virginia, let's go to you for the Water Planning Council Implementation Group update.
Okay. We had a meeting a week ago, and one of the top things that we've been dealing with is planning the rates workshop, which is ongoing. Some of you may have been participating this morning. It was a fabulous session, which will continue tomorrow. Mary Ann, do you want to do any yayas about that?
Well, I just want to make sure people knew that we had 106 people registered for it. We had 85 or so on the call today. That everybody knows when they register that there will be a recording and they can watch it later. So we also can track for you how many people do watch the recordings later, because we monitor that. We have a YouTube channel. We post that. So we've created a page in our Financing Sustainable Water website, which is devoted to the Connecticut Rates Workshops. It has all the handouts there already. It'll have the recordings of the two workshop days, and it'll have a PDF of the presentations, including anything else that Bill mentioned today that we might want to post. He offered weather data for Connecticut, so I think we might post that too. But that'll be a page that will be up and fully functional for an indefinite period of time, and so people can continue to come and watch it.
Marianne, I think it's really great that you guys can track who watches the recordings, because there were several folks who said they didn't have time to watch the full. And so our plan is to, you know, target some of these folks with the things I know we knew they were really interested in, to be able to say, okay, so if you only have this much time, you can watch the recording, this part of the recording, for the information that that I know you've been asking about. So that's really
We can even create an agenda, which talk is at which time on the recording. We can do that. So if people want to zero in on the rate model demonstration today or on Regional Water's case study tomorrow, I mean, we can do that. So I'll make a note we'll make that available.
Well, that's fabulous. Excellent.
Yep. Great. Thank you so much for that. The other thing we've been working with the Alliance on is the water efficiency.
Can we just have an opportunity, in case anybody had any questions or feedback for Mary Ann right now that might have been on today? Can we take a few minutes just to?
Certainly.
Does anyone have any comments, feedback from this morning?
Give us lots of questions tomorrow, if you think of them. We had a pretty good question and answer session today, so I'm anticipating there'll be even more tomorrow.
That's great.
All right, thanks.
Okay, so the other thing that the Alliance for Water Efficiency has been working on is perhaps recommending a change for the fixture efficiencies. And that, as you probably know from earlier presentations, we have a one-page flyer, and that is complete except for having contact folks on it. The contact people would probably be those who might be following any legislative proposals. The Department of Administrative Services and the Department of Consumer Protection are obviously key stakeholders in this, and so we want to get their input before we move forward with any official proposed changes to the legislation. Graham Stevens from DEEP has reached out to those folks, and as of a week ago, was hoping to meet with them soon. Corinne or Allie, do you have any update on that? Do you know if he's been able to meet with them?
I don't have an update on that.
Yeah, sorry, okay. We haven't heard anything further from Graham. We're meeting with him next week.
Okay. Well, hopefully we will get their input and then perhaps move forward through with that proposal. One of the things that has come to our attention is the possibility of needing to follow the FOIA rules for all the committees and subcommittees of all the Water Planning Council committees. So that obviously would include the advisory group. At the moment, we've gotten some conflicting input from the legal counsel of Pura and the legal counsel of DEEP. But in any case, to the extent possible, I think we all need to strive to meet the requirements of FOIA, which would be putting agendas and minutes on the website. And we can perhaps do that in a hybrid fashion in terms of having sort of a boilerplate agenda that would be there by default, though obviously an agenda with more detail makes it easier for people to decide whether it's worth their time to be attending a particular meeting. But I think that where possible, we should do that detail, but have the boilerplate one as a backup in case we can't, so that we can be legal, at least legal, and hopefully more informative than whatever the base legal requirements would entail. In terms of the topical subgroups, the domestic well water quality subgroup is working on finalizing the justification for a proposed statute change. As you may recall, that proposed change would include adding radon, uranium, and arsenic to the requirements for new construction of wells, and then also recommending that the full suite of requirements, including the new three, be used for all real estate transactions. They are currently used for most real estate transactions because lenders often require that, but we would like to change that to be for all of them, even ones that may be happening privately. So they are winding up their recommendations. The implementation tracking and reporting group was approved by the Water Planning Council at their meeting earlier this month. And their initial discussions are going to better define what they're going to be doing. There may be some existing expertise within DPH, which obviously would be tapped if it's available. But they need to be addressing questions like specifically what they're going to track, who the audience would be. Is this primarily to meet the requirements that the Water Planning Council report to the legislature annually? Or is it more or equally important that we have a public-facing portion of it so that other folks can be following and the tracking of the state water plan? I gotta move my page here. So we also talked about perhaps splitting our topics into smaller pieces that might be able to be addressed in two or three meetings and have it much shorter duration for any particular group of folks to commit to following the process. Also, we talked about perhaps trying to schedule the meetings and the topics that we discuss so as to avoid the midwinter time period where various things in the legislature are moving very quickly and take a lot of people's attention because it's very difficult to maintain the focus both on following the legislature as well as working on some of these work groups. That's the reason why they've had such a hard time scheduling some of their meetings. And so we had some discussion on whether we should try to break it into smaller pieces that could be done in quieter times of the year. Are there any other input from people who have attended those meetings or questions for me about the implementation work group? Hearing none, thank you very much.
I, for one, would like to know when the quieter time of year is.
Right. We have some vacations, we have holidays, we have.
Any questions for Virginia? All All right, we're going to move right along here because Josh had pointed out we should try to keep the meeting short today, considering most of us were on a three-hour webinar this morning. So we're going to move on now to the WOOC update. Dan?
So thank you, everyone. We did have a meeting on February 25th, our first implementation work group meeting. We created four separate groups. We actually have different people leading each group, which I think is great. I know some of you were part of that, and thank you for that. So we have a group on, and we did combine a few things relative to the number of people that were going to participate. So we have one group on that includes drought and conservation. They're somewhat linked, but not entirely. And some of those people that are on that group are also part of the state water planning implementation group. So it's good because we don't want to, you know, duplicate efforts or that. So we want to make sure that things are consistent. We do have a group that's looking at small water systems, not generally non-community water systems related to standards or, you know, what how do you have to build that? Should they be required to have two wells instead of one, things like that. And then the possibility of how if community water systems in close proximity, should we change the formula or calculation, which is used to determine how they would be connected. A lot of times right now, you might have somebody 200 feet away to a system and they don't connect because it's more expensive than putting a well, just doing a residential application, one well, one pressure tank, no treatment. So looking at that, there's a group on interconnections, and I do have to catch up with that group. I understand they don't want to tell anybody what to do, but we do need to get somewhere with kind of overall in the state on what needs to be done or looked at further. And then we also have a group that's working on a little bit on the planning side of trying to develop some checklists and some guidance documents for on the planning side. So Aaron and I are doing that with someone else from Aquarian, trying to help the developers and planning departments understand what should happen before a water system's developed and a number of things like that. So we had a good first meeting. We're going to be meeting quarterly with hopefully the groups are meeting in between to accomplish some other things. So that's the update right now. Does anybody have any questions? Everyone's tired from this morning. It's okay. I was on a different call for 3 hours. So.
And it's the week of daylight savings time, so an hour has been sucked away from us. We're all exhausted from it. I want to say that I do appreciate that drought and conservation were combined in the work in the WOOC work groups. That's a mouthful. I think that you know, there are things that should be considered together, and I know we've talked a lot about it in this group, so I do appreciate that.
Yeah, and a lot of people that wanted to be involved in both, so it was, you know, to make a lot of sense to create two groups. So
this is John Avery. Dan, are there minutes to that meeting on the 25th available?
Yeah, so Eric and Rich were pulling things together. The leads from each group were supposed to send over their notes to Rich and Eric. So there'll be minutes from each particular group that get posted. I haven't seen them yet. So.
Okay. And then the second question, if someone's interested in one of the four groups, what would one do to find out how to find out what the subgroups are doing? If you have an interest.
Yeah. You can shoot me an email. Yeah. Just shoot me an email.
Okay.
Right now, we're trying to get a defined group and people that are committed, but if people want to be interested and go to the meetings, they can send me an email, they can send it to Eric, but primarily Eric is trying to get the WOOCs to function on our own, which is interesting. So anyone can just send me an email, that's fine.
Okay.
And let me know what group. I mean, it's up on the website, so yep, you're welcome.
Dan, okay. I have a question. Are they group leaders supposed to be coordinating the monthly meetings?
So the monthly meetings are supposed to be informal, but yes, if there's things to talk about, get together and try to do some work in between the quarterly, right, so that you come back with some progress. That's kind of the goal. But whether the group leader organizes that or It's kind of how it's set up in general.
Okay.
It doesn't, I mean, the group doesn't have to meet monthly. I mean, that's the choice of the group. We just won't make as much progress. Like Aaron and I are trying to figure out what happened to the month between when we had the 25th. A month goes by really fast. So.
Well, to be fair, February was a short month. So.
Yeah, well.
We'll use that excuse.
Still. Yeah, I like that one. Yeah, if anyone has any questions or they want to join a group or they, you know, some, just shoot me a note and I can get a hold of somebody. I have not gone up to the WIC website to see if everything got updated, but I'm hoping it has in terms of the group leaders and the agendas for each group should be posted. I just didn't look.
All right. Any other questions for Dan? All right. Bruce, can you give an update on the interagency drought work group? I believe you guys met last week or the week before, is that right?
That's right. We met on the 4th, I think it was, and left everything as is. Everything is currently classified as normal. Anyone who's paying attention on the western, especially northwestern side of the state, knows that we might be falling a little short of normal. And anyway, we left it as normal at that time, but are monitoring conditions. We also discussed what might we do with the drought plan, seeing as this past year was the first time we ever implemented the new drought plan. If you remember, the new one was adopted during the time of the previous drought, but the WPC chose to stick with the old plan rather than switch midstream. And I don't know if anything has been said at planning council meetings because I haven't been to the recent ones, but we would appreciate any feedback if anyone wants to either through this group or through emails to me or whatever, offer any suggestions. And by that, I mean, if you think it failed in some way or could be improved in some way or whatever, let us know. And, you know, next month at the advisory group meeting would be a fine time to raise it because I'm sure we'll be talking about the group again at that time. But that's really the focus right now is we have what might be a looming abnormally dry situation coming at us and trying to improve the plan so it works a little better the next time around. Of course, improving the plan would have to go through the planning council process again, but maybe we can identify some quick fixes that would be easily adopted and might improve things going forward.
Thanks, Bruce. I think you guys have implemented a lot this year that it would be great to see a lot of that be maintained as far as the information available and how the decision process goes forward. I think it's worked really well.
Bruce, just to clarify, are you saying that you're anticipating another summer similar to what we experienced last summer? And if so, do you anticipate it to be statewide or are there particular regions where you expect the conditions to be worse?
Well, I don't trust the weather forecast for the weekend. So we're not projecting anything as long-term as summer, but it has been on the dry side on the northwestern part of the state, just marginally. Massachusetts, I think it was last week, kind of the Berkshire area, the core of the Berkshire area on the National Drought Monitor was moved over to abnormally dry. And I think it was last week, or maybe it was just the beginning of this week, Massachusetts put Western, I forget if it was Berkshire County or what, but that general area they put into their first stage of the drought plan. I certainly would not project out beyond that. One comment, though, last year, Fairfield County did not look all that dry during the period of time that a lot of reservoirs were getting awfully low, serving lower Fairfield County. So it could be that that area goes dry again, whether or not precipitation is low or normal. But honestly, your guess is as good as mine. I have no good source of information about what the future holds for us.
Yeah, and also what we saw last summer was a ramp up in peak demand, presumably due to, a lot of people home doing some watering. I don't know, but it'll be interesting to see if that repeats itself again this year.
A lot of landscaping projects.
Yes.
We were just talking in our staff meeting Monday, the eastern side of the state, as far as stream flow goes, is starting to get low. More so than other parts of the state because they got less snow. So we're continuing to watch that. Of course, if our April showers come through, things will look a lot different. But I'm also very curious moving forward on how the snowpack we had this year with the gradual melt that we haven't had in how many years when we've had snow. It seems like anytime we've had snow in past years, it's, we've lost it all in about an hour with a 60 degree day with 4 inches of rain. So I'd be really curious to see if there's any positive impact on groundwater going into the spring and summer.
Well, I can follow up on that a little bit. The well that I spent a lot of time watching last year is a real-time well the USGS maintains up in Salisbury. It's our most northwestern real-time well that you can see essentially up-to-the-minute data on at any point. And it was beginning to look bad in January, and it started looking really good. Then it started looking really bad again, like it was going downhill. But what really was happening is that precipitation was piling up on the ground. And more recently, it has started going back up again in a nice way. So it is normal right now. If you had asked me a month ago, I was kind of concerned about it, but it's looking much better now. Of course, a well just across the border in Massachusetts, I mean, maybe 2 miles into Massachusetts up Route 7, looks terrible. It's improved somewhat lately, but it might be the worst well in Massachusetts. We have wells that don't look so bad within, honestly, 4 or 5 miles. So that's the thing with groundwater. It can vary dramatically just from one point to the next. And the three that I'm thinking of in the Northwest, two in Connecticut and one in Mass, I believe are all sand and gravel aquifers. So I don't know what's going on in those aquifers, if anything, that might be having them behave so differently.
Anything else for Bruce on the interagency drought work group? All right, we'll move on to the watershed lands work group. Since the last advisory group meeting, there was a special meeting, right? That was between our last work group meeting and this meeting, right? Of the Water Planning Council. Margaret or Karen, did you want to give a report on that?
Do you want to start with what you have, and I'll tell you what my adventures were?
Sure. Let me, Alicia, I believe there were two meetings. One was the special meeting where there were two items on the agenda for the Water Planning Council, one of them being the work group's report on the renewable energy on source water lands, primarily focusing on solar projects. And then they spoke about the report again at their last regular meeting. They were very appreciative of the report, and Margaret will tell you she's been looking into the actual specifics, but my notes show that the real outcome of a report on the Water Planning Council level was that the Water Planning Council was going to write to DEEP to ask that you, Alicia, and Josh, our two co-chairs, be placed on DEEP's Integrated Resources Plan Task Force that will be looking at the interrelation of water and energy. And the Water Planning Council itself would also like to have a presence on that task force. That was, to me, the major takeaway from the last Water Planning Council meeting. And now I will let Margaret go, who has been actually looking into all the specifics of what did go on at those meetings.
Yes. Hi, Karen. And I just telephoned Alicia as the meeting was starting. I went to look up the Water Planning Council minutes. I listened again to the recorded session. Bruce sent me a link. Thank you, Bruce. But there's nothing on the Water Planning Council website for 2021. It says the site is under construction. So I was unable to get the minutes of the Water Planning Council meeting, and I have notes, but I'll just say what I thought was going to be decided. Also, Bruce, somehow I know that the drought work group is up to date, and I really, as someone who lives in the northwest corner, I appreciate the update, but when you Google and when you go into the site, I think we're getting old messages. We're still in a drought. You should still conserve water. And I kept hitting refresh. So I don't know if part of the internet is not keeping up with you or what's going on with that. I think Alicia probably can fill in what the Water Planning Council said, but two items that maybe we're not there. I'll mention, I'm still supposed to look into the Cheshire land conveyance, which I will do. It still is unsettled, as far as I know. And I don't know if anybody will be reporting on it, but in terms of source water protection, we had a good initial vote in the Siting Council on John's Hamden project. So I don't know if John will be reporting, but the initial vote was a split vote, but voting to reject it at least as written. In addition to assigning people to the Integrated Resource Management Group, Alicia, did we make progress with a different group to be the stakeholder group for solar siting, or was that going to be integrated? That was something I was looking for, and I didn't have the minutes. So I was calling you to see what I know that you had spoken at the February 16th special meeting. One of the issues was how do we deal with the larger mission so that we're not fighting with clean energy facilities, particularly solar, and how can we avoid that? And one idea was to have a group. And I do not have a good note on how that was settled. Can you help with that?
I think I know what you're asking. What we had decided at the Water Planning Council meeting was that the Water Planning Council Advisory Group would be sending up items to bring to the stakeholder group that was outlined in the IRP for some very specific items that we would like to see incorporated into whatever that stakeholder group comes out with. I don't think we got a clear answer on whether we should form a new group, but I think there are some things that still need to be fleshed out from the report. And so that needs to happen somewhere. So it would make sense that, you know, we would have a group to flesh those things out.
So I think in 2 minutes, One thing that was new, Denise's presentation on soil health was excellent and also is relevant to protecting source water lands. I believe the Water Planning Council decided that they might weigh in as a council, as an agency, on that proposed legislation. I don't know if it happened. I could just quickly say some of the points that came up in the special meeting that we were going to follow up, which is flagging watershed lands at the siting council, having notice to the advisory group or to the Water Planning Council when an application comes into the siting council that affects watershed lands. Karen has been paying a lot of attention to getting a map of watershed lands up on DPH's, preferably DPH's website, so that anyone who's doing an application or is a neighbor on an application can see where our source water lands are. And I believe Laurie said she would be working on that, but since I only have notes and I haven't verified it, that is my impression, is that DPH was going to move forward with that. Is that correct, Karen? Is that
my understanding was, and we're lucky we have Aaron here. My understanding is Aaron Boudreaux was working with Eric McPhee,
right,
on a map that would kind of integrate or bring all of this, you know, sources of information together into one map that would be eventually, I think, put on the DPH website for anyone to be able to see. And I don't mean to put Aaron on the spot, but am I correct in that, Aaron?
Yeah, so I talked to Eric and Emily Wilson at UConn Clear. They oversee the CT Eco website, which for all intents and purposes is sort of the go-to place for environmental data anyway. And I thought it would be a really good place to add, ESAs and watersheds and, all of that information, just so it could be all accessible in one place. Eric sent, DPH sent around that request to, I think, the utilities, and that's the last I heard about it. So I can check back in with him about that before the next meeting to see how it's going.
So that's great, Aaron. And I know even back 4 years ago when we were speaking to legislators about the Conveyance Act, the need for a good map was really pressing. And so it would just be wonderful for all we're doing to get that. We also had notes and we were going to work on, to go with this, better education of local commissions so that they understand the significance of applications that are to source water land, and perhaps pay attention to DPH. DPH is working on a new system of sorting and prioritizing the data as they come in. But other than the, let me see if my notes had anything else. I believe that finally that that the Water Planning Council also suggested acting as a stakeholder in connection with better decision making or more timely decision making on siting solar projects, and that would be ideal if we either have a separate group or if we do it in connection with the integrated resource management. It would be ideal if the Water Planning Council was, as a council, as an agency, a stakeholder. And my notes indicate that they discussed that, and perhaps I'm being optimistic and thinking they really wanted to do it, but I do think that would be helpful. So that was the best I could do. I just cannot. The site is under construction, so I'm a little embarrassed. I couldn't update my notes with actual minutes. I'm through, for better or worse.
If I can just add, well, there is a map on DPH's website, an interactive map. I think what Aaron's trying to do is get that onto Connecticut Eco, so it's just easier to find. I'll also just share an example. Brad Parsons, who sat in some of the watershed lands work group meetings, he's an engineer that works on solar projects. He worked on the one recently in Hamden. Well, he gave me a call a couple of weeks ago that he had another project and he had gone on the map, found it was actually on our Salt and Stall watershed. And he talks about it. He was all over it. And it's actually a very good site in this case. So,
That's good.
But that's been submitted to the Siting Council. And you said, Margaret, the Hamden petition on the Lake Whitney watershed, there was a straw poll among the Siting Council at the last meeting, and it was 3-2 to deny with one abstention. So it's not a done deal, but a motion to deny is being drafted for the next meeting, I presume.
So I really look forward. I have not had a chance to listen to it. I'm assuming there's a recording of their discussion. I'm very interested to see what reasons made sense to which commissioners and how they did discuss that. But congratulations, John. We don't want quite all that going into Lake Whitney. A little less stuff.
I think that does it, Alicia, unless there are questions.
So I think what we'll do for the next meeting, once everything settles down a little bit in the legislature for all of us, is I will put together, I think we had all agreed on some short-term recommendations outside of the stakeholder group for solar siting that we would recommend to the Water Planning Council. So what I'll do is I'll put those together, just a very specific recommendations, and then we can map a plan forward on getting some of the other materials together before the stakeholder process convenes, and come up with some sort of materials to provide, as well as further some recommendations to bring to that process. So I'll put that together for the next meeting and we can discuss. Any other questions before we move on?
Alicia, will that be circulated amongst this whole group?
Yes, and then we'll discuss it at the last meeting, or the next meeting.
Okay, thank you. To the extent that we can have adequate lead time so that I could share it with some of my constituents, I'd appreciate it.
Sure. It won't be anything different than what was already in the report. It'll be word for word the same things. We just need to talk about what we can forward to the Water Planning Council as a suggestion, sort of outside of the stakeholder process, and then discuss how we move forward on the other things. So it won't look much different than what was in that original report.
Okay, but still, thank you. I appreciate it.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah. All right. So the Source Water Protection Work Group proposal. Denise has put together an outline. I think she's still waiting to get some feedback from some key stakeholders before we send it out to you guys. Is that right, Denise?
You're on mute.
You're on mute, Denise.
So I had given it to Eric McVie. Obviously, he's in charge of source water protection for the state. We did discuss it, and he's actually in favor of it. I asked him if he had any comments on the plan. He, just like all of us, is just overwhelmed. So I think we should just send it out to everybody, the outline, and for any further comment, and then we can move it forward. And I think Eric's fine with us kind of working through the details generally. That doesn't mean he wouldn't want to, maybe make a few comments to it, but there wasn't anything he that jumped out at him that he needed to rail in. So.
Okay, so we'll send it around after this meeting so that everybody can take a look at it before the next meeting, and that is something we will discuss at the next meeting.
Yeah.
Great. As far as any questions for on that before we move on to water related legislation? All right, so tomorrow there is a hearing in, hold on, someone, I need to mute here. Okay. There's a hearing in public health tomorrow, and I put two of those bills of interest into the chat. One is 834, an act concerning water quality notification, and HB 6615, an act concerning safe drinking water. To be very honest, I have not had a chance to look at either one of those yet. But if there's anybody here who has had a chance to look at it and has any comments on either one of those, I want to give you that opportunity now. All right, so I know what we're all doing this afternoon.
Hey, Alicia, this is Dana. Sorry, I couldn't get to my unmute button fast enough. We just had a meeting before this meeting to talk through some of that on the water side with CWWA and Betsy Garra. So there's definitely issues with language in a lot of cases, and the clarity is really bad in terms of most of them, in terms of what actually is required. Now, obviously, we all care very dearly about water quality and making sure things are done well. But a lot of these bills are just so vague that you don't know really what your responsibility will be in the future. And that's a concern, you know, whether it's a water main break or reporting requirement. And then they also are continuing the assessment fees. So. Definitely some concerns on the water side.
Just a question, Dan. So your concern is the clarity of the language in those two bills, not necessarily the intent.
Well,
I mean, because if you just read, I have to tell you, I have not read them all. But if you just look at the heading, you know, to notify tenants and lessees if their water is tested and it comes back with contaminants listed. On the surface,
sounds like a good thing to do. But that's coming from the laboratory, not from the water company. They're requiring laboratories to directly report, you know, which does happen in other states. I think most of us, you know, you could have submitted a quality control sample that may test high, that the lab may not even be aware of, and create unnecessary chaos. So, you know, I think, you know, making understand the ramifications, I think we all want making sure that people know what their water is like, but, you know, I mean, a lot of us submit in laboratory work to regional water, right? They don't know necessarily what it's for, or where it's coming from. So to have to report out puts a whole nother burden on them as well. You know, and, you know, you have a lot of times you have compliance samples as well as study samples, things you're looking at, right? And this is a lot of things to consider in some of these bills that I don't think have been considered yet. How water companies are trying to do the right thing. So.
Thanks. Like I said, because if you just read the, you know, the one sentence, it sounds like the right thing.
One sentence sounds great.
Really?
I think it is, right? Telling people what's in their water is the right thing to do.
Yeah.
Well, none of us are debating that at all. Yeah. How that gets done, I mean, there is a process in DPH already to do that. I mean, there's a number of ones related to fire service charges. And see, like it's a push for bills against the, you know, in the water industry right now. So.
Any other questions on the two public health bills? There is also a, before I move on to the Environment Committee. All right, so as far as I know, of course, my schedule has moved from where it usually is. I believe, and I'm not sure if this is the case for public health, but this is the last week for bills to go to public hearing. I know Friday is the last day for environment. And on Friday, what is, I think, most relevant to this group is House Bill, or well, this is Senate Bill 1031, an act concerning the use of sodium chloride to mitigate ice and snow accumulations. This bill has five sections, I believe five or six, and each one touches on a different sort of portion of trying to get a handle on sodium chloride. And I've had a chance to look at it briefly. The first section seems to be very similar to last year's Green Snow Pro bill that was out. And the other four sections appear to be pulled from the other concept bills that were floating out there prior to this bill being raised. So I haven't had a chance to really analyze it really well, but and if anybody has any thoughts, feel free to share with the group now, as that testimony is coming due.
Well, to Dan's point, I think this bill, all in all, is very good, and CWWA is largely supported because of the impacts we've had to our supplies from road salt applications and chlorides going up in wells and that kind of thing. But there's, again, this add-on at the end about that I can't even really decipher at this point, but it has something to do with water companies making recommendations on the installations of water softeners. So just those things that come out of left field that you don't really know what to make sense of. So
it seems like there's been a lot of that this year. Yeah. I'm trying to cram everything into one bill. It's like, oh, I like this part, and what's that? the other relevant bill is, of course, with the conversations we've been having, is solar siting on forest and farmland. And that is bill number 6498. I'm still working through that one as well, but if anybody has any comments on that.
Go ahead, John.
I've seen that one too. I think what it's essentially doing is expanding the review by Department of Ag and DEEP on ag, prime farmland and core forest to go down to 1 megawatt projects as opposed to 2 megawatts. In terms of public water supply, watershed, forests, it doesn't have that much of an impact. I would like to see DPH maybe get rolled into some of this for public water supply watersheds, having a review role like Department of Ag and DEEP, and maybe making it more of a land area footprint as opposed to an energy capacity threshold. So we plan to comment on that.
So agree with John. He gave a good overview of the bill. I think it, even though it doesn't address drinking water supplies specifically, it addressed forests. But I think that what he said is correct. Should it address drinking water supplies? So this bill is aimed at the criteria that the Siting Council looks at. So I think one of the things I would remind people, if you put doing this testimony, is this is one piece of what we were talking about before, is making sure that the Siting Council is looking at source water protection. And in my testimony to the Siting Council on the Gaylord Mountain project, I basically said, let's not pit one utility, the energy utility, against the water utility, because there is a requirement in the Siting Council for electric utility that they provide generation at the lowest cost possible. And one of the things I recommended is that, well, the lowest cost to who? Because if you impact the water supply, then you're raising the cost of the treatment that the water utility has to do. So we're asking them to look at the overall cost, not just the direct cost of construction. So although this bill isn't addressing all of that in terms of the language proposed. I think commenting on the importance of looking at how the Siting Council addresses drinking water supply, and there's an opportunity to do that here. And I also just want to make sure people understand that this bill does not address what we want to address with the integrated resource plan, because I think most folks agree that by the time you get to the Siting Council, there's a lot of work, development work that has already been done in terms of where they want to take a particular project like a solar project, and that we need to not just think about it in terms of the Siting Council, but actually where it starts with DEEP and the funding mechanisms that are allowing it to move forward. So I think making sure that people understand that it's not the same thing and that we still need what the work that's going to be done by the Integrated Resource Plan. But this is just a bill that's trying to, again, update a little bit. But we're looking to support the changes to the bill. The Council on Soil and Water Conservation is looking to support the bill, but definitely we'll probably make some comments related to the drinking water supply as well.
Thank you, Denise. I have just one more bill if there are no other comments on the solar siting bill.
This is Margaret. I just want to say that we keep saying Siting Council comes too late. We need to have an initial process that combines considerations of environment and energy, which is what DEEP is supposed to do. We need to have early decisions. It can't just be based on cost. And we can incorporate some of those comments, but is anyone taking these points actually seriously in a policy way, either in GC3 or in the legislature or anywhere? I think we keep saying it, but I'm not sure anybody is thinking, oh, well, then we ought to change our process this way. I think we get heads nodding or whatever, but not the kind of change that would really be helpful.
So just quickly, I think there is a group that's really working hard on this and focused on the ecosystem services that came out of the GC3 with the Working in Natural Lands. We're starting to hear more discussion about the ecosystem services, so we're hopeful that they understand that that's part of what the Siting Council should be looking at, but certainly codifying that as best as we can. So, for example, looking at with the Siting Council, where they're talking about cost, really doing an entire cost-benefit analysis, not just the cost of construction of the generating site, but what's the loss of ecosystem service benefit? What are some of the other external costs that we're looking at? So those are the types of changes we need to make. But there is a larger discussion happening across the state with legislators, and we're starting to get other folks to understand the ecosystem services. I don't think we can speak loud enough about that, particularly from a source water protection concern. And I'm using citing the New York City model, where New York City, instead of building a multi-million or probably multi-million dollar treatment plant for the city of New York, they really invested in land preservation,
right,
in the Catskills. And it's a great model. And I think that it opens up people's eyes to say, oh, this is what we're talking about. So, I think we need to keep, hammering on that. But I do feel like we're making some progress, but it's not, it still is a discussion that we have to keep working at. So, but I am seeing progress.
Okay, thank you.
And the last bill may seem sort of peripherally related, but important is SB 926, which is an act concerning the presence of PFAS in certain consumer packaging, which would phase out the use of PFAS chemicals by 2023, which is important for water because, as long as these things exist in single-use containers, we're going to continue to have issues with PFAS contamination, leaching in areas or being released into the environment. So, because those items are just so ubiquitous. Boy, I'm having a hard time talking today. Until we get a handle on, getting that chemical out of our consumer streams, we're going to continue to have an issue with PFAS contaminating groundwater, surface waters. So that's my soapbox on PFAS and consumer packaging. Any comments on that? All right. I think unless there's anything under new business, we'll move to public comments.
Yeah, Alicia, just wanted to make a comment on two other pieces of legislation.
Sure.
And that is House Bill 6496. That's the Soil Initiative Bill. It's an act concerning soil-related initiatives, and it includes soil health. That has moved out of committee. They JF'd it with substitute language out of committee. It's not all we've asked for in terms of soil health, but it does include soil health in there, which is huge. As I tried to make a point with the presentation, that we made to the Water Planning Council, the soil health is just is so important to watershed health and source water protection. We're not going to get there without doing the right soil health. So we appreciate everyone who did submit comments and support for the bill. We are now hoping that they will bring it up for a vote, and that's our next process. But we're thinking that we have a path forward, and we're hoping to get this in the legislation passed.
Did they fix the big problems with Section 1 of that bill?
They fixed the big problems. There's still a few things that could be done, but there's also going to be a policy regulatory process following that, where we can probably hammer out some of the details. The one thing I will say in the bill that they fixed one section where they put an and instead of an or in terms of including public water supply. But they do, in another section of the bill, which did not change, only include public and private wells. And my recommended language that it should say public water supply and private wells. There seems a lot of language that is being drafted or comes out of DEEP refers to aquifer protection areas and wetland protection, but similar to the Siting Council guidance, it doesn't talk about public drinking water supply, or it doesn't talk about source water protection. And I think that's one of the reasons, that we want to bring up this whole issue of source water protection, is we just don't see this language being put into play. Again, they refer to the Aquifer Protection Act because that's under DEEP, but they're ignoring the language we need to work with the Safe Drinking Water Act. And we're seeing that in multiple bills. So just wanted to bring that up. I think it's something collectively we need to talk about. And it has to do with somewhat this issue of, well, if we're protecting watersheds, we're protecting all watersheds across the state, and we're doing a good job. Well, it's like, well, if you're protecting all watersheds, and let's say, for example, APAs are all within watersheds, everything in the state of Connecticut is within land of a watershed, then they're saying we're protecting it all the same. And, I respectfully disagree. I think we need to put a more focus on APAs, and I think we need to put more focus on public drinking water supply watersheds, and that we should call them out separately. I think it's important that when we're doing land development, we know if we're in a public drinking water supply watershed or not. And so just putting that out there, that that's a discussion that we're continuing to have. And although the bill is JF without changing all of the language, like I said, they did change one piece that changed it from a or drinking water supply watershed to and drinking water supply watershed, which was really important for what they wanted to accomplish in the bill. It still didn't call out public drinking water supply watersheds in terms of using reclaimed soils. And I think that you should know if you're in a public drinking water supply watershed if you're using reclaimed soils. The other bill that I'm just going to bring out is Bill 6441. This is important bill in terms of land protection, and because they've got a section in there for conveyance, buyer's fee, and that is, you know, something that municipalities really need to be able to protect land, and particularly when we're talking about source water protection. So the one piece of that bill is that it has a section on affordable housing that says if you're not on the affordable housing appeals list, that you can still create this fund to do climate resiliency and other types of projects, but that you can't use the funds for open space acquisition. I have recommended to Representative Gresko, who's now the co-chair of environment, that we basically include, so when it says that the land acquisition cannot be done by community, you cannot use the funds for land acquisition with towns that don't meet the Affordable Housing Act requirement, that we accept source water protection lands, and that we basically say that drinking water supply lands should be allowed no matter what type of municipality. And I pointed out the obvious that, for example, if you want to protect the water supply for the city of Bridgeport, then you're talking about, you know, Weston and Easton and smaller communities within those watersheds. Similarly, if you're talking about the public drinking water supply in Hartford, you're talking about Hartland and Barkhamsted, where the Barkhamsted Reservoir is. And a lot of these very, very small communities don't meet the affordable housing requirements. So we've recommended that. So I just wanted to point that out. I've had a conversation with Representative Gresko this morning and have provided him language to include, to make sure that any municipality, if they establish the fund under the conveyance, that they can use it for source water protection land acquisition.
Thank you, Denise. Is there anything else legislative related? If not, we'll move on to public comment. All right, are there any public comments? All right, so the next meeting of the Water Planning Council is April 6th. The next Water Planning Advisory Group meeting is April 20th. And the next implementation work group is April 13th. If there's nothing else, can I hear a motion to adjourn?
So move.
All right.
Second.
And do I hear a second? All right. So have a good day, everybody. Get away from the screens for a little while if you've been on since 9 o'clock this morning. And we'll not see you tomorrow during the webinar, but know you're there.
Thanks, Lisa.
Take care,
Thank
everybody.
You. Thank you.
Bye.
Thanks, Lisa.